Brewing is as much about the process as it is about the product. At its most satisfying, brewing creates a culture and a community that goes beyond beer geekdom to make deeper connections. It's about learning, sharing, and creating. It's a touchstone that can make people who've never met instantly friends. Beer with Strangers starts now.
Welcome to episode 88 of Beer with Strangers. I'm your host, Tony Russo, and I'm joined this week, as I'm joined each week, by Doug Griffith.
Good afternoon, Tony.
Good afternoon.
And the weather report. It is mostly sunny, but cool and a little bit breezy, and talking about snow tonight.
Yes, my wife is very excited because she's hoping to get a day off of school.
I mean, the groundhog saw his shadow, and we're only supposed to have 6 weeks of bad weather, but old man weather is just not going away.
Yeah, it doesn't say when those 6 weeks are, maybe. one of the things that I don't know I will try very hard to do is to talk more slowly this week.
You talk, the more content we get in.
That's true. But what I've discovered is I've been listening to – we have the new audio. I hope you guys are enjoying the new audio. If you're listening to this, please like us on iTunes and just leave a review that says it's not awful. We only have one review, and it says we're bad. So I know there are some of you listening to this. According to our feed, which I was going through this week, we have 35 subscribers. On the new podcast since we've
almost 200 viewers.
Yes, but almost 200 viewers. Thank you for watching. And if you're watching, go to iTunes anyway and like us, even if you don't download it. But the other thing is, so I've been trying to listen to it. If you're interested in doing a podcast, you know, you should listen to it every now and again to make sure it's still the way you think it is. And the one thing I noticed last week, and I'm glad I listened to it because Doug's face was a little too far from the microphone, and I was talking really, really, really fast. So this week he'll be closer, and I'll be slower, and we'll see. But I mean, I got the audio fixed, and you'll hear you. It sounds fine, but it was just I was just lazy. Less work for me is better work for me. All sorts of fun stuff this week. We're going to start with our homebrew corner section. There were actually two things that I wanted to mention. One was I shared this on the Facebook page, but Slate did an article on why beers taste dry. And I don't know if you recall, but that was one of our topics for last week.
No, I don't remember that. That was a week ago. Gee.
But anyway, they were saying that it has to do with how much sugar the yeast eats.
Right, right. That is true. And it depends upon the ingredients, because you can add some ingredients which the yeast doesn't eat the sugars up in.
Right.
So you have sugars left, residual sugars that add sweetness to the beer. And it depends upon how much hops you use as to how much sweetness you're going to have, because there's generally some residual sugars left in all beers. It's just the hops counterbalance or overpower those sugars.
Now, will the hops dry it out as well, or just?
It perceived to dry it out because you have more hop bitterness.
Right.
So you get a bitterness
on your tongue.
Not necessarily drier, but the bitterness overpowers the sweetness that's in the beer.
Cool. And the other thing that I wanted to mention that we didn't get a chance to touch on last week was the homebrew events. They have one in, where is it, Pennsylvania? Do they have one? Or does it move every year, the national one?
National Homebrew Association, right. Homebrew Conference. Yeah, it changes every year. 4 years ago, it was in Philadelphia, we went to it. And then following year was Grand Rapids, Michigan. Last year was San Diego. And this year, it's Baltimore.
Oh, how exciting. Are you going this year?
Yes, plan to go. And then the Craft Brewers Association has it in Philadelphia. So a lot of the local brewers will be going there, and the home brewers will be going to Baltimore.
Now, when is that?
In June.
Oh, wow. So it's coming up.
Yep. And if you're a home brewer and want to go, you have to be a member of the AHA, and tickets go on sale next week. And if you don't get them next week, they're probably going to be gone.
Wow. That's very cool. So I'm glad I asked. I remember seeing something and saying, "Oh, I think that this is something Doug does. So, I mean, I knew it was something you did, but I remember thinking that it was close enough to be worth a mention.
And they're expecting a large amount of turnout. They had 3,400 turnout for the Philadelphia event. Not as good in Grand Rapids. I'm not sure how San Diego did, but they're anticipating about the same as what they had in Philadelphia 4 years ago.
Right. Well, I mean, Grand Rapids is a big city, but it's also in Michigan. You know, and even in June, I guess it would be better because one of the things they were talking about, we've been talking about at Shore Craft, is how to get the homebrew culture more involved. And it's again one of those things where if you're in it, you don't realize that other people aren't. And even though I'm not a home brewer, you know, when I was talking to my boss about, you know, we should find a way to get, you know, more of these homebrew events to you know, promote them. She had no idea how wide and enthusiastic the homebrew community was.
And we're a sponsor of Shore Craft Beer.
Right.
So you'll find us on the site.
Right, right. But I don't think she appreciated that people traveled to these large homebrew conventions things like that. Because we were talking about it last week, and there's nothing definite, but we'd like to find a way to do some sort of homebrew event for Shore Craft because you guys come to all of our stuff anyway, so you may as well.
Some ideas, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So and also I wanted to on the outside chance that she's watching, but she's probably not. We have Vanessa Junkin, who is a reporter who was a reporter at the Daily Times, has left now, and she's at the Wicomico Youth and Civic Center doing their promotions there. So I don't know if she's going to be involved with the Good Beer Festival, but she's always been a big supporter of it. So that'll be interesting as well. And so lots of fun stuff coming up in the future on homebrewing. This week's homebrewing section, we're going to talk about recipes. Do you remember that? No.
No, okay. I'm fine.
That's right.
We can talk about recipes.
Well, what was interesting was the BrewDogs released their recipe.
Right.
And
I saw that 200 recipes, I think it was. So.
And one of the things that I always thought was interesting is that even when you have the recipe, sometimes you have to do different things. And I know that when you put together like for the Dogfish Head recipes you do, you have to test them several times.
Tweak them a little bit.
Yeah.
Because going from the batch sizes that they make to the batch sizes that we make, there's difference. The ingredients act a little differently sometimes.
Right. And so and that's when you're putting together kits for other people to use. And if people were, for instance, when they use the Extreme Brewing book, can you talk a little bit about how those recipes come out? Have you?
Oh, they come out well. We've made them many times. We provide them all the time for home brewers to make those recipes at home. There are a few recipes that we've dropped off from the original book just because they've not been very popular. It's not that they didn't make good beer. It's just I think that it's not some of the beers that just are real popular. So we've dropped those off, but we can always make anything anybody wants with all the ingredients we have here available at Extreme Brewing.
Very cool. I was just checking to make sure the volume is okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm talking loud enough.
There you go. So I can hear, like, sometimes when you're thinking, you can take it easy on that. And I'm like, oh, I think we're losing them there. Anyway.
But regarding the recipes, there are variables, and one of the biggest variables is where people ferment their beers. 4 or 5 degrees can make a difference in what the actual beer tastes like.
Really?
For ales, I like about 68, but you can make it cooler, but you make it warmer. You get a lot more fruity flavors out with higher fermentation temperatures. I mean, 72, 74 degrees, you'll get more fruitiness out of it.
Now, is that – so I've never read a recipe. If you do a homebrew recipe, does it say fermented at such and such a temperature?
It usually tells you 65 to 75 degrees, but you will have – you'll be two different beers most of the time. If you do half at 65 and do a half at 75,
right,
it'll be actually – it'll taste different.
That would be a fun one to do the next time you do the spooling up. Have you ever done that on purpose? Just to
not
see?
Not purposely. We usually do different yeast, so you get a same beer,
right,
fermented same place, same temperatures, and with two different yeasts. So you do get the characteristics of each yeast depths, so you can actually see how different a beer would be with different yeast.
Cool. Well,
temperature could be done to show that same example.
Well, if anybody out there has any examples that they'd like to share, that's the other thing I'd like to start to do is try to encourage
have a
more
brewer call in and talk about his beer.
Please call in and talk about your beer. One of the things that I would like to start in the next couple of weeks, so please reach out if you're interested, is I know that it's not always easy to dial in here because it's noon and noon isn't always the best time for you guys, even though it's a great time for us. But what I would like to start doing is having I can do an interview on the phone and then I can just tack it on and have it as part of the show. So I can say, you know, this week's interview is with so-and-so and then play it and then, you know, play it in the middle of the show. So we'd be happy to have you call in and I can do an interview with you over the phone and we can add that to the podcast, to the audio podcast to make it a little bit more interesting and to have you guys be able to participate even if you can't call in live. Although if you can call in live, please do. You can find us on Google Plus under, I forget what we're called now, Shorecraft Beer. You can chat with us on the group chat. And if you actually wanted to dial in on your computer, you could do that as well and join us there. Okay, so next up is, we talked about this last, when this first broke, the pay-to-play scandal. Do you remember that?
I saw that was a big settlement. They had a big fine they have to pay.
Right.
$2.6 million. And I read that that's half of what the anticipated profits are for that, I think, three-month period. So they didn't contest it in order to be able to keep everybody employed. And the way I saw it is they didn't want to lose because if they're providing beer for a bar, if they didn't keep providing it, somebody else would swoop it up and they wouldn't have that customer anymore.
Right. Cause they were, I misread it when I first promoted the story, but they, the alternative was a 90-day suspension.
Right.
They bought their way out of a 90-day suspension.
And that would, I think after 90 days, that'd be hard to recover.
Yeah.
Your customers.
Yeah.
Especially looking for beer from somebody else.
Right. Especially when, been blackmailing them for so long. I'm sorry.
Was it blackmail or they
were being blackmailed. Yeah. But again, that it's kind of the same thing. It's like, you know, when you come through the door, they're like, well, what are you going to give me? And you'd have to say, well, the reason that I left was because, you know, somebody ratted me out for paying you. So you can't buy your way back in. And so if you don't have anything to do that way, it can be difficult. My brother is getting into the distributing business. He works for a craft beer place in Hoboken, New Jersey, 902 Brewing. And one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, how hard it is to get, you know, it is hard to get taps and it's hard to get shelf space.
I know Budweiser was the big one for demand so much shelf space. You want to carry our products.
Right. And I think we talked about this story when it happened.
That's
about
not the same as exactly as pain, but
it's muscling.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I remember was when we were at the Brewers Association meeting in Annapolis, they talked about how there is a bunch of graft still going on. And the example they gave was a guy would go in for lunch, you know, and order a glass of water and a ham sandwich, and the owner would wait on the table and get, you know, a $200 tip or something like that. and it was funny, the guy that was the commissioner, the alcohol commissioner for Maryland, was telling the story, and he said, you know, the only reason they got caught was because there was a Miller guy in there eating lunch at the same time, and he saw them leave this huge tip, and so, you know, we had to have a conversation about, you know, why. That, you know, why'd you leave such a big tip? So it's a really tough thing to enforce. And when they do things like that, when it's not like here,
right,
you know, it's here's $100, put my stuff on. It's just like, I buy, you know, I do. And for me, like one of the things that I do is, you know, I write for a website not the beer one is different because it's kind of still a startup, but OceanCity.com is a big website. And, you know, I try to make sure that I always go to places that do business with us. So, you know, if there are two restaurants, if I'm going out to lunch in Ocean City or even in Berlin, I'm going to go to an advertiser's restaurant before I go to a non-advertiser's restaurant. Sure. And that's just, you know, you're putting money in my pocket and I'll put money in yours. And I go and, you know, I make sure that they see me, that I also go there. I'm not just talking about what a good place it is. I go there. Oh. Yeah. So speaking of which, I may go to the Globe tonight for trivia at happy hour. So we'll see how that goes.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, I haven't been to one of those.
They have some good beers on tap.
They do. They have the new Fin City beers are on tap there. And that's the kind of guy that Vince is when they started this new promotion, Fin City. I think we talked about it already, but I'll mention it again, where they're going to make beers that are only going to be, they're going to be exclusive to
locals.
And the first place that got the opportunity to have them was the Globe, because the Globe was the first person, was the first company to put Fin City on. I mean, besides Hooper's, where they're, you know, where they're located.
Been brewing, right.
But the Globe was the first one to say, yeah, we love local beer. And so now they get the first choice of all the beers that come out. And so that's fun and fair. And it's a cool way to show how breweries work together.
Vince was in the other day, and he said they're going to start brewing within the next probably couple of weeks. As soon as hard freezes are over, they can start brewing in the system there at Hooper's.
Cool.
Hooper's closes during the wintertime because it's not an insulated building.
Right.
So, but as soon as they're not having any more freezing nights, he said they're going to start brewing there and for these local establishments.
I wonder what where he brewed the ones that he came out with, or do you think he did them at home and didn't tell anyone?
I don't know.
No, sorry. Well, I love the El Capitan, the Bev.
I know they were brewing at Cooper's until late in the fall. So
maybe it's just left over from the fall.
But they kept the water and everything. I think it's mainly water what they use that they have to be able to get. And
They
kept it until they couldn't keep it, you know.
Until they couldn't keep the water from freezing.
Afraid it would start freezing.
Yeah, I had the El Capitan, which I loved. I had the Bad Luck Banana Porter, which was okay. I'm not a banana porter guy. It wasn't anything like the one you guys do here. It was actually kind of bitter. There was plenty of banana in it. I don't know if they're going to do that a lot anymore. Vince was saying it's an awfully expensive beer, but the people who love it a lot. Yeah. So. So maybe they will be making more of those in the future. I guess we'll have to stay tuned on that. And so last but not least, we were talking about, over here in America, we have, Budweiser and Miller are trying to merge. And as a result, they have to trade off some of the beers. They have to divest themselves of some beers.
It's not Budweiser anymore. Oh. It's InBev.
InBev, right. AB InBev.
And we were just talking before we started the program tonight, this afternoon, that it's hard to tell anymore who owns who.
Right.
I felt like it's almost like you need to put on the this Budweiser by InBev.
Right.
Know, a division of InBev.
Warning label of some sort.
Because it's now Miller division of InBev, isn't it? Who knows who owns it? Because now they have to get rid of the I think that's what you're getting about in China.
Right,
They've got to get rid of some of their product names or product divisions in China in order to have the merger.
Right, and then in every market, they have different things that they have to do.
Which becomes even more of a moving target.
Right.
Who owns who?
And so, for example, in China, SAB Miller has to divest itself of Peroni and of Grolsch, but does that mean that they aren't doing Peroni and Grolsch here, or does that just mean they're doing it in China? Because, for example, Modelo here in the U.S., Modelo isn't owned by AB InBev, but in the rest of the world, it is owned by AB InBev. So
it really gets confusing.
Go to the corner.
No, I mean, you got Africa, you got Europe, and who knows where else.
So as we love to say on the show, go to the corner. If you're not going to brew your own beer, if you're going to take the lazy man's way out, go to the corner and buy it from one of the breweries where you can see where it was brewed. And that way, you know, you know, what's going on in there. The bigger breweries are getting a little bit difficult to figure out.
I like your idea of local being 100 miles,
right,
within 100 miles of your, or close, you know.
Yeah.
Of where you live. That's a good, I mean, around here you got good selection.
So many good
miles.
Beers. Yeah, there's no need to, there's no need to do too much traveling. So that's where we stand on that. Of course, drink what you like and be happy, but still try to drink local. If you're the type of person who worries about these things, like it's the kind of thing that I kind of worry about. If I can keep a couple dollars out of Budweiser's pocket, I'd be happy to. Or Miller's pocket, only because I would hate to see them muscling local brands. I mean, you know, I would hate to see that happen. I hate to see local brands get muscled out because I was, you know, because I was drinking the Oculto tequila flavored beer by InBev.
Modelo.
Right. So there's that. And then now, last but not least, speaking of not being lazy, would you like to talk about the home brewing machine?
The newest one app is called Art Brew. And I was talking to Tony. I didn't see what the price is. He tells me it's $600. It does a 2.5 gallon batch. And I guess it's similar to the Pico Brew. It's all automated. You put your ingredients in, choose your recipe, and it does all the work. I saw how they started it and how it finished, but I didn't see how it was processed in between. So, but for the way it talks, they're going to have lots of recipes from different breweries around the world. So you can make whatever you want to make.
Yeah. My problem with that, I tried to be, you know, I tried to be a little bit understanding in the beginning, but it just,
but is it homebrew?
I don't feel like it is. Yeah. I mean, it's like a coffee machine. It's like the world's least efficient coffee machine in the whole, you know, if you want to brew beer, brew beer. If you don't want to brew beer, don't brew beer. I don't see, like, if I came into your house and you wanted to impress me that you brewed beer and you said, look, here's my coffee machine. I put some cereal in this 6 months ago and now I have a beer. That's not, you know, that's not, I don't know why. I get how. I don't know who this is for.
The biggest advantage I see to it, it's you can make your beer and you're going to be very consistent with brewing or mash temperatures. And I'm assuming the same thing goes for fermentation temperatures. So each batch for a specific type of beer should turn out to be the same. So for consistency, because the process is automated, I think it's pretty good. But is it really making beer? Because you're putting your ingredients in and hit and go.
It right.
I know. A beer.
Well, like if being able to have consistent beer is your goal, go to the store and buy a 6-pack of Budweiser. That's going to be the same every time.
The most consistent.
So it's just tough for me. And I worry. I don't worry, but it's starting to feel like people are like, oh yeah, craft brew is something people do. Let's sell craft brew stuff to them, you know. And again, drink what you like and be happy. If this would make you feel, for $600, you could get out the door with a pretty decent setup here,
yeah,
and then make your own beer for real.
For real, yeah.
And you can start off with, but you can start off with, you have the
kits for the extract. Now this Art Brew is an all grain setup. But like I said, it makes 2.5 gallons, which is just a little over a case of beer.
Right.
So, but for testing, knowing what you want to possibly make, that's not too bad.
So what you're saying is if I was a very avid home brewer and I wanted to do a test batch, I could throw it in there, you know, set it and forget it, and yeah, then come back and say, okay, that did well. Now I can move it up to a bigger batch.
They didn't really talk about how the process goes. I saw the video of them putting the ingredients in, and then I saw the glass coming out. They don't tell you how long it is in between from
right,
and start to finish. I'm assuming a couple of weeks, but if you're doing a lager, they didn't talk about whether these are ales or lagers.
So. And do you end up putting it in a carboy or something like a carboy? Does it store in there the whole time?
It looked, from the video, it looked like you put your ingredients in and you serve the beer out of the same vessel.
Yeah, so that means you're not using it for 6 weeks while it ferments. You know, you have it set to 52. And again, maybe there's that advantage of you can play with the temperature. You can say, okay, what does this taste like at 72 degrees? What does it taste like at 68.3 degrees? Fine. Just seems like a lot for a little.
Right. It's tied up at least a month. If you can brew today and in 2 weeks you're serving your ale, how long is...
Right. And then you have to drink it all.
Right. 2.5 gallons or last year before you make another batch.
Right. And that's one of the other advantages of a more traditional home brewing, which is, you know, you can brew a batch, clean your stuff, brew another batch. I mean, it's just a question
carboy,
getting a carboy for a couple dollars and throw it in there and you're good to go. Now, do people ferment in their kegs?
Yes, you can. Typically you don't, but yeah. I do know people who use the corny kegs to ferment in. But yeah, you can do that, but generally then you transfer it out of that into another keg to serve it.
Yeah, because you can't.
Well, you'd have yeast. You
have yeast, and that's what I was wondering. Yeah. You'd have stuff in the bottom of it if you.
But somebody, I know there are some of our customers said they'd been able to get a great deal on some corny kegs. So, yes, you know, it's just a stainless container, and it worked for fermentation, and they had plenty of them, so. Why not?
Yeah, and I guess
eliminates having to buy a carboy or a fermentation bucket.
And now, does beer ferment better like in the dark? Does that matter? That I know that matters for storage.
It's not so much dark as keeping it out of the sun. Uh-huh. The sun will skunk or give bad flavor for the hops. So you want to keep it out of the sun. I don't like to have bright light, but that would be sunlight
right.
for my beer. If I know it's going to have sun on it. Say I had it here at the floor for some reason, didn't have any other space, I'd put a piece of cardboard or a box around it so that keep the sun off of it.
Very cool. And I think that's it. I just got an email. There is a wine event coming up now. When is the wine event?
19th. We're having a get-together for our wine makers come in and just talk to each other about what they're making and bring a bottle for everybody to taste.
Well, that's cool. So it's not because I mean you I know you have do you is this an annual event?
We did it a year ago and this for this spring. So
that's interesting because I don't have much contact with the wine people in as far as they're different from the beer people. I know that there must be some overlap, but you must have people who are just wine folks.
Oh, yes. And some are just beer and some do both. So you have to come that night and see what's going on.
I very well may. That's the Saturday the 19th?
Yes, Saturday the 19th.
And this week, of course, is the HMRA show at Ocean City. So I'll be there talking about beer.
Sunday and Monday.
I'm hosting a panel at 12 o'clock.
That's the hotel... restaurants, bars, and...
Hotel, Motel, Restaurant. Yeah. So it's HMRA. Right. OCHMRA. Right. Hotel, Motel, Restaurant Association.
So I'll see you there.
You're going?
Probably Sunday.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I'll be there. I'm actually giving... I'm not giving a talk. I'm hosting a panel. I think it's at 1 o'clock.
On Sunday.
Okay. And they said, what are you...
You're taking questions?
I will.
Some good questions for you.
I mean, I will take questions. What actually Anne was saying to me, my boss is kind of running that portion of it. And she said, we'll have you host the panel. And I said, okay, but I don't know what the panel's about. I'm sure it's about, you know, tasting and pairing beers and how, now do you have, are you going to have a booth there or are you?
Just going with a friend who has a restaurant.
Oh, that's cool. Because one of the things that that's interesting is this whole notion of making your own beer like that, like you because you sold the one in Bethany, right?
Right.
So that idea of selling of making your own beer in your restaurant, I guess it would be people might be very interested in that. So if you're interested in selling your own beer in your restaurant, talk to Doug; he can help.
We can set you up with a brewing system.
Yes.
Dewey,
right. Yeah. What did I say, Bethany?
Bethany, yes.
I should just, when I write about them, I just call them the Delaware Beaches. That way I don't get it wrong. Yeah. It's easy. You know, the craft beer on the Delaware Beaches is awesome. So, all right. So cool. So come see me Sunday. And until then.
Oh, drink what you like and be happy.
Drink what you like and be happy. We'll see you, folks.
Beer with Strangers is recorded at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware. For more information about the show and for beer news and commentary, visit stateofthebeer.com, where you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow along on whichever social network you're least likely to ignore. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. The State of the Beer is strong.